Chris had contacted me originally and asked me to try to do something marriage-related, especially that would apply maybe about equally to those that were youngly married, although not everybody here fits that bill. I was talking to Jordan a few minutes ago. He said he's one of the old married couples here. I'm not sure how Missy responds to that particular remark. She wasn't there when he said that, but my back started hurting after that. I felt considerably more tired. If he's old married couple, I'm not sure what we are. But as he asked me to think about talking about that, a thought came to mind regarding our marriage retreats that we do, a lot of the weekends that we have done together since about 2000. One of the most common comments that we hear, because we have people from every level of marriage. Every year we've done one of those, it's with 50 couples, and we've had people every year that have been married less than a year, and people that have been married up to, last year we had a couple married 57 years. And that's fairly typical. From newlywed through 50 years is pretty typical of every one of those we do. And from about 15 or 20 years of marriage on, one of the things that I hear the most after we do one of those is a couple saying, I have to tell you, if we had heard some of these things 20 years ago or 30 years ago, it would have made a huge difference for us. Marriages that were still good, marriages that were getting along and doing well, but not marriages that felt like they had thrived the way they could have. People that had gotten to a stage where they felt that they were doing well, but they had gone through some complications that they could have avoided in their marriage. And so I thought that's kind of what I want to do tonight, is just talk a little bit about what do you do if you're not married yet? How do you plan properly biblically for this? How do you accomplish that? And if you're relatively newly married, which I would tell you, if you're under 15 years of marriage, you're certainly in the first half of marriage anyway. For most people. So still a different set of issues at that level of marriage than once your kids are gone and once you're dealing with aging parents and things like that. I wanted to just give you a couple of statistics and give you an idea of what happens to marriages in this country. 82% of marriages in this country reach the fifth anniversary. 65 the 10th, 52 the 15th, 33% reach the 25th anniversary. That's pretty significant, because we always think in terms of 50% ending in divorce, but only 33%, a third of marriages reaching the 25th anniversary. And those are stats not including death of spouse. That is marriages that sever by 25th anniversary as opposed to losing a spouse. By the 35th anniversary, 20%, 50th anniversary, 5% survive to the 50th anniversary. Those are disturbing figures. And so I want to do this way, starting off by asking just a general question, and hopefully several of you can respond to this so we can understand, get an idea of where we want to go with this. One, I would ask you, who's involved in a sport or a hobby that you have put some time and some effort into that you could share one or two items about what it is you do that others may not know, but could do better if they knew that, if they were involved in the same thing? Who could share something like that? Anybody?
Say it one more time.
You're involved in, and I'll give you an example this time. You're involved in a sport or a hobby or some kind of task that you have put some effort into, and therefore you are better able to accomplish because of that. I'll give you an example. We do some fly fishing and ultralight fishing, it's called, in southern Missouri for trout-type fishing. I went with a good friend of mine recently. I limited out. My son limited out. He was between us. He didn't catch a fish all day. And so we started looking at his stuff, and he didn't think it made a big difference. But just and I know it's not important to you, but he had 4-pound test line. We had 2-pound test line. We told him 4-pound test line, the fish can see. You need to understand that. If they can see it, they're not going to hit the bait. He had a 1/4-ounce lure on his. We had a 16th of an ounce lure on ours. A 1/4-ounce was too large. The fish would see it. They were disturbed by it. They wouldn't hit it. And so it allowed him to fish at a different level. I'm saying, how about anybody that does anything that says, you know what, I've kind of learned this as a trick of the trade?
Well, I have something. All right. You know, my big thing has been running, and I've been a runner for over 30 years, put in about 30,000 miles and run a lot of races. But there's a lot of things that I've had to learn, wished I knew at the beginning, that how to prevent injury, even techniques of training, everything from how you tie your shoes before a race. One race I was in once, I didn't double tie my shoes. Started running. I'm running well, mile and a half, mile apart. One of my shoes come untied. Click, click, click. People coming around me. Shoes untied. Shoes untied. As I said, I'm not going to stop and tie my shoes. So I stopped and tied my shoes. Double tied that one. If I didn't double tie the other one, go another half mile. Other one came untied. Click, click, click. So it's from experience. Boy, you run a race, double tie your shoes. I'm giving you a bunch of little things like that, but are important. Some that could save your life in terms of when to train, when not to train, weather conditions, different things. But I could bore you with all the minutia, but that, if you're interested in it.
I mean, others would understand things. Anybody else got another example? Something that you do and how it is that you know what it is that makes a difference in what you do? So?
I was trained vocally for a while, and while you know not everybody can relate to the singing portion of it, I noticed that my voice gets destroyed when I'm public speaking, and one of the things that you do to combat that, and really it's the same principle as singing, if you speak with air support and don't put all the stress on your throat, your voice will last a lot longer. And a lot of preachers will by the time they have been preaching a long time, their voice will get really tired and they'll have a hard time singing. And if you practice good speaking habits, you can save your voice.
Yeah, absolutely. And it really wouldn't make any difference if we were talking about something you learned about football, something you learned about golf, something you learned about something else that you do. But there are things that we learn that make it much easier to accomplish what it is we're trying to accomplish. And both of these are great examples because they're exactly what we are trying to avoid in marriage. Both examples who are saying, you know what, I learned by experience certain things. And it's not that you don't want to learn anything by experience, but there's some things you don't have to learn by experience because somebody else has experienced them. And sometimes it's important to understand, you could have read and found out that it was necessary to sing from a certain part and to get that air support. Or he could have read, and somebody would have already have said, you should double tie your shoes before you run because here's what's going to happen. And as we look at that, same way with fishing, if the guy had just looked at the things we had studied, the fishing magazines or watched the videos, they would have told him, use this kind of line, use this kind of lure, use this color line, things of that nature. I would say this is critical to marriage. In Hosea chapter 4, totally different subject matter, but I would tell you it's exactly the same concept. In Hosea chapter 4, look at verse 6. That's a passage that's familiar to us. We've probably heard it preached numerous times, and yet sometimes we just don't understand the implication of how well it can help us. Not only in spiritual ways, but in virtually every way of life. Who's got that? Read that for me, Kevin. Verse 6.
My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Because you have rejected knowledge, I also will reject you from being my priest. Since you have forgotten the law of your God, I also will forget your children.
Yeah. And so God says, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. I preached a sermon one time that I started out by saying, my wife is ignorant. That's another one that's by experience you learn some things aren't as good a lead-in as others might have been. But she is ignorant. But so am I. Ignorance is not something that we should necessarily be ashamed of because we're all ignorant in some level. You may have a great deal of knowledge in one area that I have no knowledge of at all. I'm ignorant in that area. I may have a great deal of knowledge in one area in which you are completely ignorant. You just don't have the knowledge. But there are some things that you need to know. And that's what God is saying. He's saying there's some things that we need to know. Ignorance is easily cured by what?
Study.
A study. Knowledge is what replaces ignorance. And so where are you going to get that information? I mean, biblically, we know what God is saying through the prophet Hosea. What was God telling people? They should know what? They should know the law of God. They should know His Word. They should be living in His Word. That's why He uses words like abiding in, dwelling in, living inside of His Word. That's where we should be. What about marriage? It's interesting to me that we may read an incredible amount, may watch a lot of programs on things that we love, sports. I've read more fishing magazines than I'd like to care to remember, because I fished all the time in Florida. Play some golf. I've read in golf magazines or golf books, and I've watched golf videos because it interested me and I wanted to learn. If I was going to play golf, I wanted to know how to play golf well. I would tell you, very few married couples and very few people who are engaged to be married or heading toward marriage are searching to find out what can they read in order to learn what marriage is all about. How much effort can I really put in? And I would tell you, it is one of the big two problems, I think, that exist in marriages and the struggles we go into. How much do I really know? One of the comments I've heard most this weekend is people saying, and you hit the nail right on the head with that, and that's normally in reference to me saying, men don't understand women. Women don't understand men. And we don't. I mean, I've been married 34 years. I continue to try to read and understand and ask questions to have knowledge so that I know how to respond to my wife. I would encourage you to do this. Whether you're married now or you're at some point in the future heading toward marriage, get as many good books, not all of them out there are good, but get as many good books as you can that will help explain some of the principles that God lays down in Ephesians 5 when He says, husbands, love your wives. And He says to nourish them, and He says to cherish them and to give yourself for them. What does that mean? What is it she's looking for? There's some wonderful books written on that. I'll give you a couple suggestions in a minute. Same way with the wives toward the husbands. Gaining the knowledge will be a huge factor in helping you to overcome some of the significant issues that couples sometimes strive with. If you can gain knowledge on the front end and then combine it with experience how to use that knowledge, that's a big help. Does anybody remember what we said, the top three sources of conflict? In one of the lessons, we weren't dealing with conflict, but I mentioned the top three sources of conflict in marriage. They are what? Does anybody remember?
Money, intimacy, and children.
Money, intimacy, and children. I would tell you, there are wonderful books written on all three of those things. If you know going into marriage that one of the things that's going to be most difficult for us to deal with is finances. It's interesting, I give couples, before they get married, one of the things I give them is a questionnaire. I didn't even think about bringing that. I'll send Larry a copy of that that just has a whole series of questions for the future husband and wife that they can check off what they think about this. Even things like, how many kids do you want? How many of your money should you save? It has lots of different questions in there. So that husband and wife, they fill them out separately from each other. Then we look at them together to help them understand. Even going in, they don't have the same ideas. They think they're thinking very much alike. But I've numerous times had couples sit across from them where one says, I want two children, one says, I want four, to which the other one says, really? Four? They hadn't thought about that. You know, I want to save 20% of our income. The other one's thinking, I want to save 5% of our income. Those are going to be issues of conflict when you get inside the marriage if somebody's not working to solve that. And so you can find some wonderful books that will help you understand that going in. Same way with the issues of children, dealing with those children issues. And I would tell you that almost always the intimacy or sexual side of marriage is one or two in that survey, every single time. More frequently number one than it is number two. And so as you're looking at that being an issue, and I think that's an issue in marriages many times of Christians, as I get a chance to talk to couples, because we treat that subject so much like it's anathema. We just don't want to deal with that at all. We're raised in homes where nobody is really sitting down and saying, look, this is very much a part of marriage. It is a microcosm of the whole relationship itself, and there are things that you need to understand. And so because of that, I encourage people, there are some great books that are out there that help with that kind of thing, that help a couple come to the same page in their minds, to be thinking about things the same way or in a more cohesive way. There's a book by Ed Wheat called Intended for Pleasure. There's a book by a man by the name of Lehman, is his last name, that's called Sheet Music. Those are books that normally we don't tell Christians to read, but I would tell you they're great concepts to read because you can count on it. Because of the difference in male and female, and the difference in the way we perceive those kinds of things, that will always be an issue, because money is not a gender issue. I mean, there are some women that are what we might call financially retentive or frugal, some men that are, some that are very loose spenders. We've got three sons. They are across the board on that. We've got one son that the money burns a hole in his pocket. He has to spend it the second he gets it. Fortunately, he married a very frugal wife. We've got one son that Halloween candy lasted from one October to the next. That was always the case. And one that was just kind of right in the middle. So that's not a gender issue. The feeling toward children is not a gender issue. And so sometimes it is more prevalent in a marriage, sometimes it's not. It's very possible that both the man and the woman feel exactly the same about that, and that they can come to complete agreement. I would tell you the intimacy side of marriage is absolutely a gender issue. It becomes one of the most prevalent problems because we view it differently. So I would tell you, get information on that. And if you want to list, somebody asked me earlier, I think it was the old married man back there, that asked me earlier about a list of books. I can give you a list of different books to possibly read. But I would tell you, get your hands on them. If you're willing to read on other subjects so you get better at it or know more about it, read on marriage. You want to be good at marriage? Read on marriage. You're not going to get good at golf without practicing it and reading about it and learning about it. You're not going to get good at marriage either, unless you really put some effort into it. How much work do I need to put in? Secondly, I think the other biggest issue is probably the one that we even fight more, and I think it's the issue that Jesus fought with his disciples over and over and over again. Why don't you turn to John chapter 13 for a minute. And I can assure you, if you can solve this one, then the ignorance issue will take care of itself, because you'll put everything you've got into learning all that you can. In John chapter 13, this is a passage that's familiar to us. This is in the last day of the life of Jesus. I don't know how often we think about that when we read a passage like this. Jesus is meeting with the disciples, and he knows it's his last day, and he's already told them, you know what, I so longed to be with you this day. I so wanted to eat this supper with you. Even though he knew it was the last meal he was going to eat. He said, I just really looked forward to this day. This day is so absolutely special. And so there are different things that happen. And we know that Judas eventually is the one who betrays Jesus. And Jesus had said that it would be the one who dipped the hand with him, or dipped the bread with him. And so Judas dips, and Jesus tells him, go out and do what you've got to do. Then we've got this incredible incident of the washing of the feet. John doesn't really tell us why that came about, but he tells us something about Jesus and what he wants us to learn from it. But Luke tells us why it came about. Luke says that they were arguing among themselves. And do you remember what they were arguing about? The disciples were arguing what?
Who's the greatest?
Who's the greatest? Just stop and think. Now I understand that happened more than once. You know, James and John went to Jesus and they wanted special places. Who can be on the right? Who can be on the left hand of Jesus? That's a very, very human reaction to anything. They're arguing about who's the greatest on the day that their Savior is saying he has longed to spend with them because it's the last day he's going to be alive. Do you ever think of the impact of that? How do you feel if you're Jesus? I'm here to tell you, I will never see you on this earth again. You're my nearest and dearest friends on this earth, and I'll never see you on this earth again. And what are they doing? They're arguing. Why? Probably because of the way they were seated at the table. That's probably what stemmed the argument. Somebody got a better seat than somebody else. And so Jesus, seeing this, wants them to understand something about life. And so he gets up and he washes their feet. And in verse 12, so when he had washed their feet, taken his garments and sat down again, he said, do you know what I've done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you say, well, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I've given you an example that you should do as I have done. Most assuredly, I say to you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor is he who sent greater than he who sent him. If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them. Jesus, you can just get a picture of him. They're having this argument. Jesus washes their feet and says, do you even get it, guys? Do you even understand what happened? Do you understand who I am? I mean, who should have been washing whose feet? You know, this should have been them just clamoring when he came into the house to wash his feet. The last day he's going to be with them. He's about to die and he's down on his knees washing their feet. And he says, here's something you need to understand, because this is the hardest thing you'll have to fight in marriage and every other relationship you have. That's the concept of self. It is the hardest battle. Judy and I have been married almost 34 years. We have never had an argument. I'm just swallowing. I'm not done. We've never had an argument that was based on selflessness on both of our parts. I mean, just a butting of heads and fighting because I just refused to allow her to serve me because I wanted to serve her so badly that we just couldn't come to terms. Every argument comes from self. And so if you're looking at conflict in marriage, learning what you need to know to solve them is a big help. But getting self out of the picture is even a bigger help. I love a description one time. Abraham Lincoln was walking with a couple of his sons. Both boys were crying, and crying hard. Somebody stopped him and said, Mr. Lincoln, what are the boys crying about? To which he responded, they've got the problem of the entire world. He says, I've got three walnuts. Both boys want two. That is so much of life. We just fight self so badly. You know, Paul says, practice the death principle. You want to overcome self? Practice the death principle. In Galatians, he said, I've been crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live, yet not I, but Christ lives in me. And the life I live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God. That's the key. I'm not interested in living for Mark. He told the Philippian brethren, he said, have this mind in you, which was in Jesus Christ. You've got to find a way to get yourself out of the picture. And it shows up in some of the most ordinary ways that you don't even realize. I can tell you, 34 years of marriage, one of the questions I ask couples when we're counseling, I say, who holds the remote when you watch TV? Sometimes we're just automatic. I'm going to hold the remote. I'm going to be the one who's in control. One lady, we're going through a grocery store line, and the lady said, you've got something sticking out of your purse. She said, I know, it's the remote. My husband said he would come with me, but he didn't, so I took the remote. You know, so there's different ways. Now, that's probably self on her part as well. But how do you fight selfishness? I mean, look at Jesus. How many times did he try to teach his disciples that lesson? And I would tell you, every conflict you'll ever have in marriage will be because of that issue, because that's the source of every conflict. Look at James 4. He said it is the source of every single kind of conflict, and it always will be. I heard a man the other day say, when any two people or countries want peace more than they want anything else, they will have peace. I think that's absolutely true. When they want peace more than they want anything else, they'll have peace. But we just can't give up some things sometimes. And in James 4, when James is talking about that very concept, he wants us to understand that it's the whole nature of pride and what goes with it. Where do wars and fights come from? Do they not come from your lusts, your desires? I mean, that's not necessarily a bad word. He goes on to tell us lust leads to sin. Lust is not a sin. Lust is just a very strong desire. But he said every fight, every quarrel, every war comes from internal. It's something that we want, and we allow it to get in the way. And I can tell you, with my wife, there have been times that I was more interested in me than I was in her, and it leads to some kind of conflict. Yeah. Sometimes that she was more interested in her than she was in me, and it leads to some kind of conflict. I would tell you, whatever you have to do, battle self. Determine you're going to, in your marriage, battle self. We pray about it every single day in our devotional time. 34 years, and every single day we pray when we're having that devotional time, God, help me to remove me from the picture today and focus on my wife. And she asked me to pray on her behalf, help for God to help her remove her and to be able to focus on me in our relationship. And I'll tell you, it takes every single day because that's how big of a problem it is. If you can conquer ignorance, you can conquer selfishness. You are a huge way onto being able to have the tools that are necessary for successful marriage. How many of you in here are close to married but not married? Should I ask that question? Maybe some people don't know. Maybe you should just answer that in your head, who's close to marriage. How many of you in here have read multiple books on marriage that are not married? How many of you have read multiple books on marriage that are not? 1, 2, 3, 4, about 5. You know, there's some, there's a book actually by Les Parrott, Les and Leslie Parrott. Let me think of the name of it. How to Save Your Marriage Before It Starts. Good book. Got some really good stuff in it. Several different books. Sacred Marriage by Gary Thomas. Read Sacred Marriage. I would encourage everybody here to read Sacred Marriage by Gary Thomas. Books that are about helping to understand the other person. There's books, If Only He Knew, and there's a comparable book to that on the other side for the women regarding her. The tremendous books are written. Harley wrote His Needs, Her Needs. I would encourage you to read any of those books. Anybody, if you want a list, ask me. I don't want to just, it's hard to write them all down this evening for you if you're going to try and write them. But if you want to ask me about a list, I'd be happy to give you a list of the books we use in our seminars and in our retreat stuff that has been, I think, some of it wonderfully written on very sound biblical principles. There's a book by Jimmy and Debbie Evans called Marriage on the Rock. The entire book is based on Genesis chapter 2 and Genesis chapter 3. A marriage that was struggling mightily, their marriage was, until they founded it on the four principles out of Genesis chapter 2 and 3. And brought their marriage back together, wrote this book. There's some great stuff out there. I would encourage you, eliminate ignorance, which is easy to do. And if you don't eliminate ignorance, what you're left with is foolishness. God very much condemns foolishness. If you can have the knowledge but don't, that's foolish. Gain the knowledge, battle self. Any questions or anything? Or
we don't want to be like the fellow when he was told he needed to deal with his ignorance and apathy, and he said he didn't know and he didn't care.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you know, and it is really that way. Do we care enough about marriage? Why do you think it is that most people don't read a lot of marriage books? Give me your feelings on that. I've asked that question to married couples. And I can tell you almost invariably you get the same answer from married couples that have been married very long.
They thought they already knew.
Some thought they already knew. So they thought that, kind of like Larry, you know, all of us as preachers, man, I'm telling you, I had some good sermons on raising kids until I had them. That just ruined some sermons I had. You know, same way on marriage. Had some great sermons on marriage, you know, until you get married. Sometimes we think we know and we don't know. And secondly, the most common, go ahead, I'm sorry. Everybody's circumstances are different, no question about that, and that affects what it is that's going to apply. The most common answer I hear is because people thought it would happen. They just thought marriage would happen. They thought it would grow. They thought they would grow. They were madly in love. Actually, they're madly in lust when you get married. Most of us are. We don't even understand all the love concepts. We're madly in lust or infatuated, and it continues to build in love. But they just thought marriage was going to happen. That because I'm married to this woman, we'll grow together and we'll get strong together. I'm just telling you, from experience and from reading, just not going to happen for very many couples, if any. You have to put the effort into it. Any other questions or comments or anything else? That's it for me.
All right. Thank you, brother. Appreciate it. We'll take a little bit small break, and then for those who wish to continue with our singing, we'll be picking that up in just a moment.